After Elena Garancha seduced Don Jose on stage at the Metropolitan Opera in Richard Eyre's riveting production of Carmen, someone whispered loudly behind me, "Well, that's the first time that scene ever made any sense to me." All the raves Carmen has received so far are well-deserved, thanks to the Latvian superstar seated across from me right now. New York Magazine called her the best Met Carmen in 25 years, and I'm trying to remember who was that good 25 years ago. Elena Garancha will be performing the title role now through December 4th. She also has a new CD out from Deutsche Grammophon of gypsy-inspired music called Habanera, and I'm delighted that she could join us today on the show. Hello.
Hi.
The big surprise to me, of course, is that you're a blonde because you have the curliest black hair. That's a good wig you're wearing. It would be impossible to play Carmen as a blonde, wouldn't it?
Not for me. I mean, I really have no problem of going blonde with my blue eyes. I think the problem is that the people have such a clear cliches or such a clear imaginations of how Carmen has to be that I don't think they would be ready to see Carmen. Though I have to say that I was in north of Spain in La Coruña and I was shocked to see how many blonde people are they actually naturally on the street. So,
Well, maybe not gypsies.
Well, you know, people have mixed so much with each other. I mean, if one says, I'm a Native American, what does it really mean, you know?
But it's interesting that you point out that we already come to Carmen with certain preconceptions. Hmm. And I'm sure that that affects you to some degree in approaching this role. You have to be aware of the fact that people think of Carmen in a certain way.
Definitely. And particularly the Carmen and sexuality is a very, very tricky thing because you can never say what is right or what is wrong. You know, people about the sensuality, sexuality have so different opinions. One likes, you know, be strangled. Another one likes to have a white blankets, you know, and roses on the bed. So what is right? What is wrong? At the end, it is about how you feel. And if you feel on the stage that you are ashamed of lifting your skirt, then something is wrong.
Well, your Carmen is a very real person, not the cliche that I've become used to. And I was wondering if it's also because the acting levels in opera these days are so much higher than they used to be.
Definitely, because the public is much more demanding nowadays. You know, people want to believe the story. They want to see that if somebody is dying of you know, like a Traviata with a, what's the word of it in English, you know, of a chest sickness or whatever, you know, that she
in
really
La Boheme, she has consumption tuberculosis and often sung by sopranos who were a little overweight.
Well, exactly. And that's why I think people kind of are used to, you know, all business, you know, movie stars and sports and everything has become so conscious about the bodies that, you know, unless you can deliver it, you don't really are believable. And I remember when I was preparing the Carmen, in the first dance rehearsal, in the second verse, I thought I'm going to get unconscious because I was not ready for that. So next day I went to gym and started to prepare for the condition to be able, you know, to be flexible, to dance and not to be out of breath.
And you also are, this is a very physical performance. You're thrown around at different times. And a couple of times you're actually singing full force while lying on your back.
Yeah,
I would imagine
nice.
That's easy. I always thought that would be really hard because you want your diaphragm to be able to fill up.
You have to get used to that sensation. You really do have to because suddenly you don't have really like feet on the ground and you know, you are kind of disbalanced a little bit. But I remember my teacher said that when you are capable of doing that and laying on somebody's arms, like in a second act when I go back and the dancers are carrying me or in a second act later on the back, if you can do it, that means that your body is ready to be on the stage and do, you know, what you are requested to do.
Well, I would imagine acting well in an opera is doubly difficult because at the same time, you're always thinking about voice quality.
And, you know, it has become actually even more difficult with the HD transmissions because the camera gets you so close. You know, you see everything. You see every sweat pearl. You see every trembling on the lip, on the tongue, you know, and you have to be conscious about it because you don't want to have a suffering face when the people are looking about the love duets or scene. So yes, but I love challenge, and I love when people really put me to the borders and say, no, you can do even more. So it's nice.
Had you wanted to be an actress first? Because I've heard that you applied to the top drama school in Latvia.
Yes, and you got refused.
You weren't accepted. Why?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm a, you know, tall, grown, strong, slowly grown woman. And those times they said that they had imaginations of being like Natalie Portman, you know, a small, teeny kind of gentle woman. And they said that they couldn't imagine me being that naive Giulietta girl. So I was rather a mom or a nanny. And I would say, you know, thank God that those times it didn't really happen, because as actors smoke, I probably would have started to smoke and my voice would have gone. Nevertheless, my dream is still to maybe be able to be in a movie, opera movie, at some movie, and just to really try out to be a professional actress.
So you didn't start your singing lessons until you were 17, although yes, most opera singers do come into their maturity later than people in other professions.
Oh, absolutely. And that's why, for example, if you compare the pianists or you compare the ballet dancers, you know, they are professional since they are 10, you know, and dance and everything. We really start at the age of 25 to be able to actually control more or less what happens with our body.
But didn't your mother tell you when you started that you wouldn't make it as a singer?
Yeah, and you know what? I have to give her that credit, that when I listen to my early recordings, I probably nowadays wouldn't believe that I would make it as well, because my voice wasn't really what it is now.
What happened? Is it just a matter of training or maturity?
It's maturity, it's training, it's body control, it's self-confidence. I was very, nobody will believe it, but I was very, very shy. So when I started to sing, I actually was ashamed of being and exposing myself, you know, so cost me actually quite a lot of overwhelming of just being, you know, ready enough to stand in front of the audience, because I always thought I'm not good enough. So and then I got the teachers, and, you know, I can't deny, obviously my body had those vocal cords inside, but it's about to meet the right teachers. It's about to make the right decisions in your career, not to accept roles too early, and basically not to destroy yourself.
When you take on a role like Carmen, what kinds of decisions do you have to make? Are the acting decisions first? Are the singing decisions?
No, mostly it's a vocal demand. It is about if you can give the emotions by not harming your voice. You know, because Carmen is, as you said, very physical, and sometimes you have no time to really prepare the sound. So you half scream, you half yell, your body is bent down, so you can't really breathe in properly. And if you can manage all of that and come out of the performance not harmed, and if you notice that your voice is actually in quite good shape, you know, 1 month later, after you've been rehearsing daily, the Carmen, it's quite a good sign.
Well, when you rehearse, you don't sing out full voice, do you?
But
when
I try
to. When you're at the Met, you have to reach the top balcony. I don't know how many balconies there are.
And 4,000 people. I love it.
And you're singing over a huge orchestra.
Yeah, I love it. You know, I always loved big spaces. And actually, my voice, I think, really blossoms in a big space rather than in a small of 200 people. And I try sing out, actually, in the rehearsal, because that's, again, a training, you know. You never run marathon just by 2 days starting running before, you know. It's a preparation. And I think if you prepare yourself really day by day, not exaggerating, you can actually protect yourself quite well.
Alfredo Kraus talked to me about this, the great tenor. He said that he was always surprised when other singers would whisper when they weren't singing. He said he thought that was the worst thing they could do to their voice, because singing really is an extension of speech.
Yeah. And it is, you really have to know how to whisper and how to mark. And very often the marking really kills the voice much more as a proper singing. That's true.
So you've been singing Carmen for a while. This production was directed by Richard Eyre, one of the great theater mm-hmm. directors. Did he give you certain insights that you didn't have before? Has your approach to her changed?
Which was nice is that he said that he, if I remember correctly, saw only one production before, or maybe one movie, the Pasvega movie. So he didn't really have any cliches in front of him. And it was very nice just to talk and find. And very often we landed actually in the same direction, on the same kind of a setup, also emotional setup, you know, as, for example, I have seen in certain opera productions before. But for him, it was new. So it was nice that he was challenging us. And he was, because he is a film director and also theater director, he was concentrating on so many small details. And you can actually see in HD, or you can see also in a DVD of Carmen, that there is so much body language, hand, eyes, back, hair, you know, feet. So this is wonderful, because people very rarely take time to really work on small details.
But is this similar to your interpretation when you did it at Covent Garden?
Well, you know, music is written and the text is written already there, so I can't change that. And it's there
but
is
the
a certain rhythm.
Is different.
Yeah, of course, and there is certain rhythm in the music, you know. And it is very different if you actually have spoken dialects, as we had in London, or you have a sung recitatives, which is here, and that makes a lot of difference.
Well, someone wrote into our show a Wagnerian Halden tenor. He said, and he said that you are, and I'm quoting, that rare artist that actually improves her performances, performance to performance.
Oh, how nice. Thank you.
This is from a peer in the business. So,
that's so nice.
Well, are you thinking that way, or are you just thinking, well, I got through another night?
No, I do. And you know what? Because nowadays the pirate, the recordings is a blessing and a curse, you know, because everything gets documented and people have them on the rapid shares and the Twitters and the YouTube and everybody has the opinion about it. Nevertheless, I try to listen to all of those recordings and I really do after my opera night. Next day, I usually get the link of a fan and I listen to that and I try to improve for the next performance, which I didn't like of the performance before.
My guest is Lena Garancha, who's starring as Carmen at the Metropolitan Opera now through December 4th. She also has a new CD out called Habanero with gypsy-inspired music. You started off as a Mozart singer, didn't you?
Well, I think that Mozart actually is the composer that nearly everybody starts with, you know, and there are voices who has the possibility to develop and to go into different repertoire. My voice started from Mozart. I've sung some Rossini, and I feel that now it wants a bigger lines, and I feel that I have not really reached yet my full blast of what my voice can be.
Where are you going, toward Wagner?
Maybe eventually my dream is Amneris, not now. I'm 34, so probably around 40 or 45, somewhere in that range. I should be able, and I hope I can sing in Amneris. However, I will be going back to Mozart with the Clemenza, also here in Met in a couple of stages, seasons later, and also in Vienna. So it's all about the balance, you know. You cannot eat chocolate every day. You need also to have a nice salty chips.
Well, you were pulled out of Le Conte de Hoffmann, Tales of Hoffmann, to do Carmen last year.
Well, it was actually, I got convinced because Peter Gelb said, well, you know, this is the situation. Would you consider it? I said, no, I mean, this is too much pressure for me. And my original Carmen actually was supposed to be the Carmen that I'm doing now. And he was, Peter was after me and he said, no, but it's going to be such a good turn for you. And I think you really could bring something new and something different. So it was back and forth. And I was in London. I met with Richard Eyre and I said, so how do you see the Carmen? Because I was scared. I was really literally scared to replace also somebody as Angela Gheorghiu. And, you know, to do a new production and the opening night and the HD. And somehow they all convinced me and it turned out really, really well for me. But
Well, do you have to prepare as long as you would if you were doing a Broadway show? I mean, how much rehearsing goes into a production like this? Because it is a rather complex production.
Yeah, usually a new production is around 6 weeks.
Oh, so it's a long time.
Yeah, it is. And it gives you time to really work on the role, you know. And I like when I know that I'm going to have a role, I usually start 1.5 years, 2 years before to work on that role.
And then did you have to make much of an adjustment when Roberto Alagna was replaced by Brandon Jovanovic?
Well, it's different physicality. You know, Brandon is taller and his shoulder are wider. So it's obviously a visual effect is already different, you know.
He makes a wonderful Don Jose.
Yeah,
great actor too.
He's wonderful. And he's so generous also and so genuine, you know. And it's physicality. You obviously need to get to know each other. You know, you're shy at the beginning. You don't know, you know, if it's all right if I touch you here. If it's all right, you know, if I have my leg there and it's nice that the people like him, you know, are wanting to be there.
Well, I was thinking during the performance that Bizet might have been a bit shocked to see this kind of production because the opera was written at a different time and there wasn't that much physicality, including should I touch you here or touch you there?
Yeah, probably.
When did you first hear Carmen?
I saw it actually on the TV, if I'm not wrong. It must have been 80, beginning or middle of the 80s. It was Julio Migueles and Domingo, the famous movie. And I was so blown away. I said, my God, this is so wonderful.
Was there a lot of access to opera in Latvia?
Not really, but we had a program. We had the three TV channels. It was one Latvian, which was half Russian and half Latvian, and then we had two Russians. And actually, the cultural life those times was very, very active. We had obviously mostly concentrated on the Soviet Union artists, but nevertheless, they had a radio transmission from La Scala going, you know, everywhere, and Bolshoi going everywhere. So we were very well educated what's going out in the world. And of course, we had a transmission with all those great singers. And then once in a while, like twice a week, we had the programs where they showed also the shows that were filmed somewhere. So this is where I saw it.
Well, were people encouraged in Latvia, or were you more likely to have been encouraged if you had grown up in Russia itself?
Well, Latvia is a very, very independent and has always been, you know.
The minute the Soviet Union broke up, Latvia declared its independence.
Yeah, of course, but we were very strong before actually Second World War, and Latvia has a very, very strong tradition and a culture, you know. We actually are much more Germanic as Eastern, so to say, and Slavic. So even in the Russian times, I would say that we continue to keep our traditions, and of course we were suppressed and everything, but there was a certain Latvian pride that never got lost.
Well, you automatically would have known a bit about German and mm-hmm. about Russian, mm-hmm. so there a bunch of operas are covered there.
Oh, definitely.
The English, your English is very good. I don't know how you acquired that. Your French, you sound very comfortable singing French in Carmen.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Is your Italian as good?
Yeah. Actually, the French is nearly one of the languages I don't speak, as funny as it sounds, but I have a kind of a blockage, you know. I understand quite a lot, and obviously I translate everything what I don't understand when I sing to be able to react to whatever I say or my partners are saying. But I speak Italian, I speak English, German, Russian, Latvian, and I started to learn Spanish because I live in Spain now. So it's I still haven't given up the chance about French as well.
And there are a lot of different languages on the new CD.
Hmm.
How many?
Haven't counted, actually.
Well, the music comes from different countries, Spain, Austria, Ireland, even this country.
Mm-hmm.
How did you wind up choosing the material on it? And why not just your favorite arias, as so many people in your position would have done?
Yeah, well, exactly, because it's again numbered 78th time to sing the same aria that people have already heard, you know, and it's challenging for me to find a new repertoire. And I wanted also to show that every country or so many countries have been inspired by Spain, and everybody else has a different picture about it, you know. It can be rather melancholic, or it can be very sparkly, it can be very sentimental, or can be very upsetting for that matter, you know. And it's also interesting for me to make this research and just to know very often there is music that I hear for the first time.
We even sing some zarzuelas.
Yeah, I love them.
But there's always that uncomfortable thing, maybe less here, but with opera singers in America, when they would appear on the Ed Sullivan Show in the old days when opera singers still could be part of the popular culture, it always sounded a bit of a strain when they sang a pop song. You know, here's Helen Traubel singing something by the Beatles. It just it really was a problem for somebody like me because it didn't sound like it was natural to mm-hmm. her. But has that changed because people have grown up with pop music as part of the whole culture that formed them?
Yeah, well, I think the main problem is actually that the opera, trained opera singer's voice becomes so distinctive, you know, and we are all the time reminded, make your tone supported, you know, put your tongue on the right place, remember about the resonance in your forehead and in your cheeks. So our teachers and our coaches and our conductors always say, you know, this is what you have to think about it to be able to sustain your career and not harm your voice. So it has become so natural that when you open the Beatles or Cole Porter songs, you know, you kind of start just do your natural way of singing, which is an opera singing. Nevertheless, of course, nowadays there are so many singers who are doing the crossover, and many of them get slaughtered because, you know, they say, my God, that opera is losing, you know, the specifics of it. But I find it wonderful, and I find it really very refreshing. And I actually grew up in the musical world. My mom was working in a theater. So I went at age of 7 to my first Tannhäuser and left after the first half because I didn't understand what was going on, and I thought everybody's mocking each other.
Your husband's a conductor?
Mm-hmm.
From Gibraltar?
Yes.
And that's why you live in Spain?
Partly, he was born in London and studied also there in a Royal Academy. But I love Spain. And it's so funny that the first time when we went there, it was like 10 years ago, I finally felt like I have come home. And I really believe that somehow I've been born in the wrong place.
We're going to go out with a lullaby by Manuel de Falla. How did you come upon that?
I've knew that songs, those cycle actually from my mom because she was a lead singer and she's done it so many times. And I've done it actually with the piano and with the orchestra myself a couple of years ago. And nevertheless, now with the guitar, it kind of finally sank in the right place. And Jose Maria Gadiardo Rere, the guitarist, he's so influenced by flamenco that he said, you know what? We have to do it somewhere often in a concert. It just has that special atmosphere you can't find anywhere else.
We have a listing of the remaining dates that you'll be performing, Carmen, at the Met on our show page at WNYC.org. Mm-hmm. I know it's a hard ticket to get, but if you have an opportunity, you should try. There's also the CD, Habanera, which is just out from Deutsche Grammophon, and it has been my great pleasure to have Alina Garancha, G-A-R-A-N-C-A, with the stuff on it that suggests that she is from Latvia, as our guest on our show today.
Thank you very much.